Mr. Perlman was waiting for me after the lecture. I didn't recognize him, for I'd met about a million people since our last encounter. But when he gave his name, it all came back so clearly that I realized he must have made a deep impression on my mind. Somehow he got me away from the crowd, though he disliked meeting people in the mass. He had an extraordinary knack of dominating any group when he found it necessary, and then clearing out before his victims knew what had happened. Though I saw him in action scores of times, I never knew exactly how he did it. At any rate, half an hour later we were having a superb dinner in an exclusive restaurant, his, of course. It was a wonderful meal, especially after the chicken and ice cream of the lecture circuit, but he made me pay for it. Metaphorically, I mean. Now, all the facts and photos gathered by the two expeditions to Saturn were available to everyone in hundreds of reports and books and popular articles. Mr. Perlman seemed to have read all the material that wasn't too technical. What he wanted from me was something different. Even then, I put his interest down to that of a lonely, aging man trying to recapture a dream that had been lost in youth. I was right, but that was only a fraction of the whole picture. He was after something that all the reports and articles failed to give. What did it feel like, he wanted to know, to wake up in the morning and see that great golden globe with its scudding cloud belts dominating the sky? And the rings themselves, what did they do to your mind when they were so close that they filled the heavens from end to end? You want a poet, I said, not an engineer. But I'll tell you this. However long you look at Saturn and fly in and out among its moons, you can never quite believe it. Every so often you find yourself thinking, it's all a dream, a thing like that can't be real. And you go to the nearest viewport, and there it is, taking your breath away. You must remember that altogether apart from our nearness, we were able to look at the rings from angles and vantage points that are quite impossible from Earth, where you always see them turn toward the sun. We could fly into their shadow, and then they would no longer gleam like silver. They would be a faint haze, a bridge of smoke across the stars. And most of the time we could see the shadow of Saturn lying across the full width of the rings, eclipsing them so completely that it seemed as if a great bite had been taken out of them. It worked the other way, too. On the day side of the planet, there would always be the shadow of the rings running like a dusky band parallel to the equator and not far from it. Above all, though we did this only a few times, we could rise high above either pole of the planet and look down upon the whole stupendous system so that it was spread out in plan beneath us. Then we could see that instead of the four visible from Earth, there were at least a dozen separate rings merging one into the other. When we saw this, our skipper made a remark that I've never forgotten. This, he said, and there wasn't a trace of flippancy in the words, is where the angels have parked their halos. All this and a lot more I told Mr. Perlman in that little but oh-so-expensive restaurant just south of Central Park. When I'd finished, he seemed very pleased, though he was silent for several minutes. Then he said, about as casually as you might ask the time of the next train at your local station, which would be the best satellite for a tourist resort? When the words got through to me, I nearly choked on my 100-year-old brandy. Then I said, very patiently and politely, for after all I'd had a wonderful dinner, listen, Mr. Perlman, you know as well as I do that Saturn is nearly a billion miles from Earth. More than that, in fact, when we're on opposite sides of the sun. Someone worked out that our round-trip tickets averaged $7.5 million apiece, and believe me, there was no first-class accommodation on Endeavour 1 or 2. Anyway, no matter how much money he had, no one could book a passage to Saturn. Only scientists and space crews will be going there for as far ahead as anyone can imagine. I could see that my words had absolutely no effect. He merely smiled as if he knew some secret hidden from me. What you say is true enough now, he answered. But I've studied history and I understand people. That's my business. Let me remind you of a few facts. 2 or 3 centuries ago, almost all the world's great tourist centers and beauty spots were as far away from civilization as Saturn is today. What did old Napoleon, let's say, know about the Grand Canyon, Victoria Falls, Hawaii, Mount Everest? And look at the South Pole. It was reached for the first time when my father was a boy. But there's been a hotel there for the whole of your lifetime. Now it's starting all over again. You can appreciate only the problems and difficulties because you're too close to them. Whatever they are, men will overcome them, as they've always done in the past. 4. Wherever there's something strange or beautiful or novel, people will want to see it. The rings of Saturn are the greatest spectacle in the known universe. I've always guessed so, and now you've convinced me. Today it takes a fortune to reach them, and the men who go there must risk their lives. So did the first men who flew. But now there are 1 million passengers in the air every second of the day and night. The same thing is going to happen in space. It won't happen in 10 years, maybe not in 20, but 25 is all it took, remember, before the first commercial flight started to the moon. I don't think it will be as long for Saturn. I won't be around to see it, but when it happens, I want people to remember me. So, where should we build? I still thought he was crazy, but at last I was beginning to understand what made him tick, and there was no harm in humoring him, so I gave the matter careful thought. Mimas is too close, I said, and so are Enceladus and Tethys. I don't mind telling you, those names were tough after all that brandy. Saturn just fills the sky, and you think it's falling on top of you. Besides, they aren't solid enough. They're nothing but overgrown snowballs. Dion and Rhea are better. You get a magnificent view from both of them. But all those inner moons are so tiny. Even Rhea is only 800 miles across, and the others are much smaller. I don't think there's any real argument. It will have to be Titan. That's a man-sized satellite. It's a lot bigger than our moon, and very nearly as large as Mars. There's a reasonable gravity, too, about a fifth of Earth, so your guests won't be floating all over the place. And it will always be a major refueling point because of its methane atmosphere, which should be an important factor in your calculations. Every ship that goes out to Saturn will touch down there. And the outer moons? Oh, Hyperion, Japetus, and Phoebe are much too far away. You have to look hard to see the rings at all from Phoebe. Forget about them. Stick to good old Titan. Even if the temperature is 200 below zero and ammonia snow isn't the sort of stuff you'd want to ski on. He listened to me very carefully, and if he thought I was making fun of his impractical, unscientific notions, he gave no sign of it. We parted soon afterward. I don't remember anything more of that dinner. And then it must have been 15 years before we met again. He had no further use for me in all that time, but when he wanted me, he called. I see now what he had been waiting for. His vision had been clearer than mine. He couldn't have guessed, of course, that the rocket would go the way of the steam engine within less than a century, but he knew something better would come along. And I think he financed Sunderson's early work on the paragravity drive. But it was not until they started building fusion plants that could warm up 100 square miles of a world as cold as Pluto that he got in contact with me again. He was a very old man and dying. They told me how rich he was, and I could hardly believe it. Not until he showed me the elaborate plans and the beautiful models his experts had prepared with such remarkable lack of publicity. He sat in his wheelchair like a wrinkled mummy, watching my face as I studied the models and blueprints. Then he said, "Captain, I have a job for you." So, here I am. It's just like running a spaceship, of course. Many of the technical problems are identical. And by this time, I'd be too old to command a ship, so I'm very grateful to Mr. Perlman. There goes the gong. If the ladies are ready, I suggest we walk down to dinner through the observation lounge. Even after all these years, I still like to watch Saturn rising. and tonight it's almost full.